Good morning. It is 10 minutes after 10. The House Judiciary Committee is in session. In attendance are Representative Lynn, Representative Herron, Representative Ramirez, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Holmes, Representative Gatto. We'll be joined shortly by Representative Gruenberg. Thank you. And our objective this morning is to continue discussion on Senate Bill 284, Campaign Disclosures. We are joined this morning by our good friend and our counterpart in the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator French. Our intention is to meet from 10 until noon and then to recess until 5 p.m. If necessary. We have with us from APOC, who will be sitting at the table today, Mr. Patasson. We'll also be joined at the table by Senator French so that he can speak to his piece of legislation, and then we are going to have access to Mr. Dunnigan online to be a representative for industry so that, in fact, we create a de facto roundtable to take us through the amendments so that all points of view are represented in a manner that suits the chair. We have available offline to answer questions. Thomas Dosick, I think that's who Mr. Patasson was referring to with the Attorney General's office. Jerry Anderson is available offline to represent the interests of APOC. We will ask to speak to Mr. Dunnigan and will help us take us through various amendments. Lorna Shaw is with us from the Council of Alaska Producers, and then Mr. Bullard is also available to assist us by phone. I think I'd like to get some testimony from Lorna first. Is there anybody in the room who wishes to testify? I don't see anybody here. Don, do you have any testimony? You're just listening today? Barbara's name? So if we could go to Lorna. Lorna, are you with us this morning?
Thank you. Chairman Ramirez, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lorna Shaw, and I'm the Executive Director of the Council of Alaska Producers. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I know you guys have a long day ahead of you, so I'll keep my comments brief. The Council of Alaska Producers is a mining trade association whose 13 member companies operate the active hard rock mines and projects in Alaska. In general operations, the mining industry spends hundreds of millions of dollars in Alaska every year. The industry employs thousands of Alaskans, and the industry pays significant state and local taxes in Alaska. What is interesting is that most of the mines and projects in Alaska are owned by foreign corporations. In fact, all but two of the CAP member companies are foreign corporations. So foreign corporations are the ones who spend hundreds of millions of dollars here. Foreign corporations are the ones who provide thousands of jobs to our residents, and foreign corporations are the ones who generate tax revenues for Alaska's government. And I believe the RDC pointed out yesterday, many of the foreign corporations among my organization's membership are owned within the portfolio of the Alaska Permanent Fund. When the mining industry, the business that these foreign corporations are engaged in, is attacked by an initiative, they need to have the right to defend themselves. The mining companies were targeted by the 2008 anti-mining ballot measure. That campaign went down in history as the most expensive campaign in Alaska ever. And I think the results would not have been so favorable for the industry if foreign contributions were prohibited. So it's imperative that companies doing business in Alaska can be permitted to engage in ballot measure campaigns. The industry was told that 2008's ballot measure 4 was not the end and that there may be other initiatives in the works, and we need to be able to continue to engage. CAP supports open disclosure and transparency in election campaigns. We do not support limiting discourse, but foreign corporations can be the target of initiatives, and foreign corporations must have the ability to participate in campaigns. It's that simple. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Lorna, thank you very much. Are there questions for Lorna on that point? Lorna, we will appreciate the time that you have to stand by. We're going to get to Section 10 of the bill, which will addresses the involvement of is it somebody's car in this committee?
Yes, it's mine, and my roommate has my keys. Mr. Chairman, I'll go take it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, no, my roommate's got my keys. She doesn't know how to unlock the car.
Oh,
I just had to say, I'll be back.
What are the odds?
You're a problem solver. Yes, ma'am.
That's classic. So, Lorna, when we get to Section 10 of the bill, Jane Pearson and I had a great meeting with Senator French and with Cindy yesterday afternoon, and we went through, what we think represents just a model of cooperation between both bodies and both parties. We went through a roster of amendments, and Senator and I made a decision to not open the title of this bill today and to narrowly focus on the subject matter at hand because it is of significant concern that we don't Christmas tree this bill out in such a way that whether it passes or fails shouldn't be contingent on the other elements that could be added to it. So we want to make sure that it leaves this committee as a focused piece of legislation dealing with campaign disclosure. And yet, when it comes to Section 10, we share the concerns, Lorna, that you brought up this morning, which are, I told Mr. Dunnigan, I referred to it as taxation without representation yesterday, and initially he said I was off mark, but curbing discourse for a corporation that's choosing to do business in Alaska an organization that pays taxes who no longer can express their point of view does curb their First Amendment rights, and in so doing it changes their decision tree when it comes to engaging in commerce in the state of Alaska. That affects jobs, that affects investment, that affects tax revenue for the state, particularly in the case of mining interests. It affects infrastructure, power, roads, the elevation of remote communities who often are the principal workforce for those entities. So Section 10 has raised a lot of ancillary issues for the chairman and I yesterday. We think we have arrived at a fair compromise that addresses the involvement of foreign corporations. In addition, for those that are in the room, we also asked for a roster of sample disclaimers that Mr. Patasson put together for us, and I'm going to have Mr. Patasson take us through these as we get to Section 14 of the bill so that it has relevancy and context to when we get to that part of the bill. What I'd like to do is ask if there's anybody else who wishes to testify this morning or online. I don't think we have anybody else other than just those that are available for questions. There's nobody in the room. Mr. Dunnigan, are you online?
Yes, I am online. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunnigan. So if you will just stand by for us as we begin to go through our dialogue this morning, we will be grateful to rely on you as a valuable reference for us for industry. Don, we would invite you or Barb, as you see fit, to come up and to be representative of any union concerns that you have. So if you want to flag us if something comes up so that we're representing all parties, and I am going to try and safeguard what I think are the mom and pops or the small boutique groups. And as we have stated here, I don't want to curb the opportunity for smaller groups on boutique issues and municipalities to be able to get engaged. So with that, what I'd like to do is ask you, Mr. Patasson, if you have any remarks that you would like to make at this point.
No, just as long as we're going through the bill, I'm here to answer questions.
Okay. You should just introduce yourself, put yourself on the record this morning.
Certainly. My name is John Patasson. I'm with Department of Law, Labor and State Affairs Section. My main client is APOC staff in adjudication matters before the commission as well.
Thank you. And we thank you for spending the week with us, and we thank you for singing both verses of the Alaska State Song with us yesterday. Senator French, would you like to come up and join us, please? It'd be a privilege. And Senator, if you'll introduce yourself and put yourself on the record, we would appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning. I'm Hollis French. I represent West Anchorage, Senate District M, and the State Senate.
How nice to see you, Senator.
Likewise.
For committee members, are there any remarks that you care to make? We have closed public testimony. We have Mr. Dunnigan in the room. We have Barbara Huff-Tuckness in the room, Senator French, Mr. Potassin. With the consent of the committee, I think at this point we will proceed to amendments on the bill. Pardon me?
I'm missing the first one.
You're missing it?
It's still coming.
Still coming down? Okay. I have a list, and we're going to start. Remember these. So I'm going to start with amendment number one. This is Bullard P.19.
And I'll object for discussion.
Representative Holmes objects for the purposes of discussion. This is page 5, line 25.
So P.1.
P.19, Bob.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I understand this amendment, it basically deletes subsection 5.
Representative Holmes, that is correct. Amendment number 1 deletes section 5, and then it adds the word...
4 between 3 and 4.
Correct. And then it keeps in place on page 6, subsection C, which was an amendment that was inserted by Senator Huggins on the Senate side. And so for the record, what I'd like to do is to have Mr. Potassin take us through what this does and then hear from Mr. Dunnigan to see if this satisfies the needs that he brought up yesterday. Mr. Potassin, by removing section 5 or number 5 of section 10, can you tell us the effective result, please?
Well, the effective result is it comports with what's already in federal law, and that is that, you know, foreign nationals may not directly or indirectly in connection with an election make a contribution or expenditure. Then sub B goes on to define what a foreign national includes. I believe what sub 5 was trying to do was get some sense of what regulation does on the federal side already. And it's my view that with subsection A and subsection B, it's really, from an enforcement standpoint, not necessary to have sub 5. So by removing sub 5, I think you still give APOC, and this is a policy call, to give APOC the jurisdiction to enforce this law. That's largely what's already in federal law. So that's the effect of it. I can take any questions as well.
Thank you. Representative Gatto, then Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would there be a real negative effect if we actually deleted Section 10? And some of the reasons for that is the Citizens United case, where we're dealing with corporations and PACs. And I'd never read Citizens United. I don't know how long it is, but we've talked about it enough here. That does this give more reporting requirements for a corporation than a PAC?
Section 10, and we can discuss this at other points of the bill, but Section 10 is still a restriction law with respect to foreign nationals. So this memorializes what is already essentially a federal law that foreign corporations, foreign nationals, are not permitted to make expenditures. So this is still a restriction aspect of the law. Citizens United did not take a position whether there's compelling government interests to have a law like this. So this isn't a disclaimer or a disclosure law. This is a restriction on foreign national speech, candidate or ballot measure elections.
Representative Gatto, yesterday we had this discussion, Senator French and I did, and the balance that we struck, and it certainly is open for discussion and or a committee vote. The chair isn't opposed to it, but as the chair, I'm going to support Senator French in this, that 1, 2, 3, and 4 could stay in, but that 5 was where the ambiguity existed, and that Section C that was amended on the Senate side by Senator Huggins seemed to keep us in conformity with federal law. So, follow up, Representative Gatto.
Is that where Mr. Dunnigan said Section 5 was actually unconstitutional?
Precisely, and we can hear from, after we take some questions from the committee. I thought we would go to Mr. Dunnigan and see how he feels about this once 5 is removed. We had a conversation with him yesterday afternoon also, and this seems satisfactory, a satisfactory compromise that met most needs. Representative Holmes?
Mr. Chairman, I think my question's been more or less addressed.
Okay. Thanks. Mr. Dunnigan, can you talk to us on, about the deletion of Section 5 and Amendment Number 1, please?
Yes. I think the problem with 5, if you'll look at it, the when they talk about defining a foreign national, they say it's a domestic subsidiary or a domestic corporation, and they talk about the selection of people who participate in the making of contributions. And what this leads to is an example where foreign interests purchase an American corporation lawfully on the U.S. stock exchange. They operate it lawfully. They vote their stock and elect American citizens to the board. All of a sudden, if those American citizens, let's say they're a mining company, as was testified to earlier, and they want to get involved in defending their legitimate American business against attack, they suddenly find themselves in violation because of their foreign ownership. This is unconstitutional on its face, based on the Citizens United case and also based on some other decisions which the U.S. Supreme Court has issued with respect to the rights of foreign nationals. And it's, and I agree with very much with the comments of John Potassin. The rest of this is all, well, it's already foreign law. The policy issue is whether or not Alaska wants to independently enforce these rules, because I think that's what happens if the rest of Section 10 passes. But Section 5 is simply unconstitutional. It establishes very, very unconstitutional restrictions of free speech based on simply a foreign ownership criteria. And it departs from the notion that the rest of the bill has, which is essentially a classic notion of indirect, undisclosed financial participation. And I think once you, the first time you read 5, you think, well, they're just trying to plug the gap. But if you read it closely and look at how it works, it goes way beyond the initial ideas in the rest of the section, which are we don't want people funneling foreign money into American or Alaskan elections to affect the outcome. But if you have an American corporation with American employees and officers funding its own money into one of these things, then it's no different than any other American corporation. And then you start making distinctions based on foreign ownership, and the and it's not only constitutional problems, there are huge commerce problems, and what does this do to the value of American stock on foreign exchanges and so on. I mean, this thing really mushrooms out. So B5 is actually a bad piece of legislation, and we fully support the compromise that Representative Ramirez and Senator French have reached on this issue.
Thank you. Representative Gatto?
Yeah. Mr. Dunnigan, just a question so that I get an understanding of what a foreign corporation actually is. If indeed we have an American corporation that's a mining corporation, and the American corporation owns 100% of their stock, they put it on the stock market, and it's purchased by a foreigner, purchases 51% of the stock by an individual, does that make it a foreign corporation, or is it required that a company with a foreign name owns 51% of the stock?
That's a very good question, because that's another drafting, what I think is a drafting problem in 5. If an individual, if Rupert Murdoch wholly owns his media empire subsidiaries, he's not covered by this. But if a corporation were to buy the stock, they would be covered by this. I haven't heard any explanation of how that makes any sense at all, but you're correct. When they define domestic subsidiary and how those rules would work, they seemed to leave out Section B1, which says a foreign national includes an individual who is not a U.S. citizen and so on. But that wasn't carried forward when they started making the domestic subsidiary rules, and I have never understood how that makes any sense.
Well, thanks, Mr. Dunnigan. You know, I guess when I hear somebody else agree that it doesn't make sense, I feel more comfortable. I had trouble wrestling with it myself.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds from the testimony all around the table, excuse me, like this makes sense, and it puts our laws in compliance with federal laws, but reduces the feared ambiguity, and I'm going to be prepared to lift my objection whenever you're ready to. And the rest of the committee is there.
Thank you. And Lorna, because so many of the entities that you represent are Canadian-owned, who are members of with Alaskan and American subsidiaries, does this, from your read, is it satisfactory compromise on Section 10? Lorna?
Chairman Ramos, I'm not an attorney, but I believe it is, and I would go with what Mr. Dunnigan recommends.
All right, very good. So with that, I'm going to ask you, Representative Holmes.
Chairman, I remove my objection to Amendment Number 1. Oh.
I have an objection too. So go ahead and remove yours, I also object.
Okay.
As I understand it, this mirrors federal law. And it gives us a hand in what we do here. We can act as Alaskans rather than depending on the federal government to take up our case. So I would object to this.
Okay. The objection is maintained, but I'm not clear on, Representative Lynn, I'm not clear on the nature of your objection.
This section, Section 10,
okay,
mirrors federal law. Is that correct? To a degree.
I think it was interfered.
To a degree, I
if I can be.
Mr. Patassin.
Thanks. Through the chair. What Sub 5 is doing is it's taking regulation, which is essentially, it takes what's in A and B, and it's trying to put into law what the FEC has essentially decided to do through regs. And so what Section 10 does is through A and B, it's a memorialization of what's in federal law currently. Is it really even necessary to have something like Sub 5? Because of the effect of A and B is already very strong. I mean, what A and B does is it allows enforcement through APOC, any foreign national as it's defined through 1 through 4, influencing an election. It's strong, and what it does, and to say that 5 adds any value to what's already there, I just, from my view, I don't know how necessary 5 is.
I maintain the objection.
Okay, Representative Cotto.
Just another question, Mr. Chair. You know, we've seen more ads than we can take on Pebble Mine, but they'll continue, and I think Anglo is the company. Is that a South African company, Anglo? So their goal, let's say they own 100%, and now they want to start advertising, they would be prohibited from advertising because they're a foreign company?
It depends on what the advertisement is. A, is it a mass communication? B, is there a pending ballot measure or a pending candidate election? The Pebble ads today, and I don't watch a lot of TV, but if they're just issuing general issues.
I wish you did, Mr. Patassin.
I'm sorry.
He's too busy.
But the general issue advocacy that you see, That's not under the purview of what we're doing, but if there is, like Lorna pointed out, if there's a ballot measure, if there's an actual election that either the people of the state of Alaska or are going to go and cast a vote about, that's when.
Then it would apply.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Susan, the objection is maintained. Would you take the roll, please?
Representative Gruenberg is not present. Representative Holmes?
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom?
Yes.
Representative Herron?
Yes.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
No.
Representative Rammers?
Yes.
5 yes, 1 no.
Okay, and Representative Gatto, the exchange that you had with Mr. Dunnigan, does it focus on number 4, the exchange that you had about 4 and ownership of a corporation, of a stock is sold, a corporation becomes a 51% owner, is that in number 4 here in Section 10?
Mr. Chairman, it was a development in my head that I'm trying to look at how an ordinary situation such as that one would be addressed by Section 10 of the legislation. And so, that's what I'm after, is wherever it's located.
So I think as we go through these amendments, if necessary, we may come back and look at Section 10, number 4, to see if it is helpful or dilutive to the objective that we have this morning. At this point, I want to proceed to P.18. And I want to offer this as amendment number 2. So I'm going to move amendment number 2.
Chairman, I'll object for discussion.
Thank you. Representative Holmes objects for the purposes of discussion. P.18 takes us to page 8, line 4. And now, Mr. Patassa, by your own admission this morning, you don't watch a lot of television.
I watch enough.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well stated. Well stated. So the purpose behind amendment number 2 is clearly there has to be a disclaimer for a radio advertisement, because it's the whole way that it is conveyed. We discussed in committee earlier this week that the audio disclaimer in a 30-second ad could be 13 seconds if we call out five largest contributors. In an amendment we're going to take up shortly, we're going to reduce 5 contributors to 3 contributors, but it still is upwards of perhaps a 9-second disclaimer. On television, we do have the ability to offer a visual disclaimer, but the time that it will take otherwise to disclaim who the contributors are will affect a message. And in particular, one of the concerns that I discussed with Chairman French, which certainly is my point of view, is that if Senator French is BP of Alaska, their treasury pays for an ad, and all they have to do is say paid for by BP of Alaska with the other disclaimer language. But if it's an ad that is paid for on the other side by Lindsey Holmes, Nancy Dahlstrom, and Carl Gatto, then a lot more time is allocated to a smaller entity, and BP of Alaska, Mr. French, may be able to afford $1 million worth of television advertising. And the three people assembled at this table as a kitchen table activist group can only scrape together a lesser amount of money. So the seconds of time, which is a thing of value. So I find that the disclaimer is problematic to me anyway, because it, and I'll just put this on the record, I think it's unfair to kitchen table groups versus large corporations, but I'm not going to have that fight here. I'm simply going to put it on the record. And so, amendment number two, removes the audio component from television, because television is so much more expensive than radio, and on radio, the only way to do a disclaimer is with words. Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a thought, Mr. Patassin. Is it legal to do a voiceover so that one of the two, the disclaimer and the ad, one of them is in the background, lower volume, and the ad runs according to the rules.
I'm sorry, can you clarify the question through the chair, Representative Gatto? I want to make sure I get the question just
yeah.
right.
Could I have a voice simultaneously being broadcast on radio, paid for by blah, blah, and blah, at the same time I'm saying vote for blah, blah, and blah, and have
you're saying
simultaneously that, broadcast? Does that satisfy the rule?
You're saying both messages on top
audio,
of
audio, right, okay. Right.
The messages through reg have to be clearly discernible. That's what I would speak to there. But I hope I'm answering your question. I don't.
Well, in part.
Representative Gatto.
Yeah, clearly, I mean, it could be clearly discernible. I just wondered if you cannot voice over and say, they do that in songs all the time. Somebody's singing, and in the background, somebody's singing.
I got you, yeah.
Could we, and I'm not worried, want to do it, I'm worried, not worried, but concerned whether or not it's a legal possibility.
Well, perhaps I can satisfy Representative Gatto if we do an amendment to this amendment offering a sung disclosure in the background.
It has to be followed by the second verse.
It's written in the style of the
article. But I find that the issue of easily discernible is it trumps the nature of something walking on top of something else. Representative Gatto?
I think it could be easily discernible, especially if your message is now in the background and you're concluding your message with, you know, I'm a nice guy and I think you should support me. And on the front it says paid for by Mr. Nice Guy, my address is.
Yeah, and it's
easily discernible.
Through the chair, I mean, there's another aspect of that too. I mean, if there's music in the background and all those, I mean, but it's a very case sensitive whether something is discernible or not. But, I mean,
All right, thank you.
Representative Hare.
Mr. Chairman, just so clarification to Mr. Vitassin, is so if you have a television ad and the ad is saying vote against or vote for, and it's clearly something you can see, you cannot have a paid for in the audio at the same time?
So the circumstance is there's an ad, there's...
It's a visual ad, yes. A
visual ad, and you're visually saying paid for by.
No, that? you're the visually it says vote against or vote for, but the audio is where you're saying you're saying this long disclosure of who paid for it. That's only an audio. Can you do it that way?
Go ahead.
Senator French.
Representative Herron's question. Keep in mind that the bill right now underneath this amendment would require you to have an audio disclaimer. Paid for by, I approve this message, top five contributors are. The purposes of the amendment is to remove that audio disclaimer so that you would no longer be.
That's why we're seeking clarification.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Representative Holmes, is the objection maintained?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, I actually have one more question. Just broader.
Senator French?
I have a question for Senator French, sorry. So if we remove this, then what form, if any, of disclaimer would be in the TV ads?
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, the disclaimer would appear, the way the bill is written right now, the disclaimer would appear both in print and in audio.
Okay.
And just for the purposes of my perspective, I think that's the way to go, because TV ads run sometimes, you know, in the background, you know, you're doing two things, you can't see the little print at the bottom, and even though it has to be discernible, from my perspective, with these new players in the last elections, unions and corporations, I'd just soon err on the side of caution for the first election cycle or two to make sure we have good disclaimer.
Understood. Representative Gatto?
Just Just for clarification, you're saying that the bill removes the audio requirement from a TV ad?
No, and thank you for that clarification, Representative Gatto, through the chair. The amendment would remove the audio disclaimer.
Okay.
The bill has it.
Got it.
Print or visible and audible, and the amendment would remove the audible disclaimer, the one you can hear.
Just follow up.
Representative Gatto.
Because TVs vary from the monster, everybody loves big screen, to some little 17-incher cell phone.
Right.
Then printed disclaimer is truly invisible. Am I correct? In some sense.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I think it's going to vary how well you can read the visible disclaimer.
Was that an iPhone you were holding?
the chair, Representative Gatto, yes.
Just trying to attack some of the issues here about, because we want to focus on what we're trying to accomplish. And I can see some areas where we might accomplish what we hope to accomplish and not cover all the bases, get tagged out for missing third base.
Indeed. However, the cost of television is so expensive, and to allocate 9 to 13 seconds for an audio disclaimer leaves you 17 seconds to convey a message. And for somebody who, you know, I will tell the committee that, you know, some of these things that we do legislation on, it's theoretical to me. But when it comes to television and radio, as I told the chairman yesterday, you know, I have, in my private sector capacity, survive in a world of giants, you know, and I compete against chain restaurants, and I compete against large corporate hotels, and have to find a way as a small kitchen table hotelier to compete against these large entities. And I'm very protective of a kitchen table group or a small municipality. For instance, I anticipate the finance committee to roll out a large general obligation bond today that's going to include a sports complex for UAA, a life science center for UAF, and a crime lab amongst some rural schools, probably. Now, the UAA alumni, the UAF alumni, no question are going to, they told me, they're going to roll out large campaigns. And those campaigns are going to be, I presume, subject to this level of disclosure. And they can afford this level of disclosure. But what if the three of you decide that you think that we're putting our grandchildren into debt, or that I have Fairbanks people that think that a general obligation bond isn't the way to go, and so you have these large entities that can put together a large amount of capital and can afford through frequency to lose 13 seconds or 9 to 13 seconds out of a 30-second TV ad. But you have smaller entities that simply can't afford that. You know, we have clean elections coming up on the August ballot. We have parental notification coming up on the August ballot. We had a year ago some hotly contested issues in the municipality of Fairbanks. And so there are many issues that are subject to this. And so for me to allocate a third of a television advertisement to an audio disclaimer for what is principally a visual medium is too much. You deprive the buyer of too much value, in my opinion, as a heavy user of television in the private sector who competes against the giants. Princess Carnival Corporation owns Westmark and Princess Hotels, for instance. And I have to find in the private sector a way to compete against those giants with a fraction of the capitalization and a fraction of the advertising budget and a lesser ability to absorb the promotions that they offer. And so in that regard, I'm a kitchen table compared to giant corporations or other large interests. And so if TV is the preferred method of communication, you have print, radio, television as preferred methods of communication apart from the internet, then, you know, I television is by far the most expensive, it's a premium way of cost-wise communicating with the public. And so I feel very strongly that a 9 to 13 second audio disclaimer deprives the person who's paying for that message, you know, of a considerable amount of the value. Mr. Dunnigan, do you have anything to weigh in on this, or is this not germane to your interests?
I think that the policy issues on this are identified and on the table, and I don't have anything to add to the ongoing debate.
Thank you. Any other committee discussion? Senator French, Representative Lynn?
Well, no, I just, when you read, I'm going to object.
There's already an objection on the table.
Well, if she removes her, you can add mine.
Yes, sir. Senator French.
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, and I shared some of this information with you. I know you and I just disagree on how to interpret this, but it's worth for the committee to know that we looked at some APOC reports of mom-and-pop organizations, small organizations built to support or oppose ballot initiatives, and it was our a review of those documents that told us that those entities don't operate in the TV medium very much. Treasuries don't allow that. I know you have a different perspective about Fairbanks TV versus Anchorage TV, and I'm sure it's a valid point, but in general, the ones we looked at spent their money on mail and radio.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you. Page 8, line 6, because this amendment is going to affect that. The very last word, or very two last words, is easily heard. Does that concern you that easily heard is a fairly low requirement? If you can hear all of my stuff easily, especially if I put it all in about 1 second. Or do you mean heard under what? I'm not sure what the word you really want there would be.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I think that's one of those terms that you could probably write a page on or write easily heard, and I think we're going to have to leave it to the humans at APOC and the humans at some other sort of regulatory body to come to a considered judgment on. And I think that's probably the best we can do. Thank you.
Any other comments about this? The objection is maintained. Susan, will you take the roll?
Representative Holmes?
No.
Representative Dahlstrom?
Yes.
Representative Herron?
Yes.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
No.
Representative Gruenberg is not present. Representative Rammers?
Yes.
Four yes, two no.
Thank you. So with that, amendment number 2 passes from committee. That takes us to amendment number 3, which is P.9.
Chairman, I'll object for discussion.
So I move amendment number 3, Susan, which is P.9. Representative Holmes objects for the purposes of discussion. This is on page 7, line 10. Senator French?
It's been moved and objected to?
Yes.
Sorry, I was getting oriented. My view is that in the wake of the adoption of amendment number 2, I'm not sure that you'd want to go from 5 to 3. I'm not of a strong view either way, 5, 3. But I think eliminating the 5, eliminating all audio disclaimers now from a TV commercial, I guess I don't see the harm in having these contributors appear in print.
In the state of Washington, Mr. Potassin, did we, the state of Washington, who's beginning to create record, that's really what we're in the process of doing here, is beginning to create a public record of how to handle the With People case. Where is the state of Washington at?
State of Washington does have top 5 contributors. State of Washington hasn't had a challenge to that law at this point. In this area, when it comes to disclaimer on ad or disclosure to AIPAC. The government certainly has a freer hand in imposing not necessarily restrictions, but reporting and disclosure disclaimer requirements, but just in general terms, it's still a burden on political speech, and you know, the more modest a burden is, the better chance it has of being considered constitutional as things go on. Now, that's not a that's not to say 5 versus 3 is constitutional or unconstitutional, but it just hasn't had a challenge.
Understood. And would you just put on the record how it works if you have 10 people that are tied for the same amount of investment, and then how AIPAC will determine the fairness of which 5 or which 3 are selected out of the tie?
Yeah, my understanding is through the state of Washington, what they do is they allow, and it's either through REG or just functionally how their sister agency decides how to handle it, is they say pick them, you know, pick whichever 3 you like. And that's one avenue to go. But again, we have a substantial regulations project going through APOC now. This may be an issue to take up there as well.
So can we discuss that for a moment, please, Mr. Patasin, whether it's 5 or 3, this gets to the heart of my concern, which is that ambiguities, you know, are often construed against the person who wants to do the advertising in AIPAC. What is what would be necessary language for us to draft, regardless of whether it's 5 or 3, that would add that clarification into statute, so that we don't have to rely on AIPAC for a reg?
Again, it's a difficult area. I think this is why Washington did deal with it with regulations. So.
Okay. It's not difficult for me. I don't trust AIPAC with ambiguity. So, Mr. Bullard, are you there? It's not you I don't trust, Mr.
Patasin.
You're a man of great integrity. I appreciate that, Vice Chair. You're above reproach. But, Mr. Bullard? Are you on mute, Mr. Bullard? Mr. Bullard, we can't hear you. See, he's there. Mr. Bullard, maybe you can call back in. We'd like to pose a question. We'd like to pose a question to you. Let us know when you have me back online, please. Yes. Mr. Bullard?
While we're waiting.
Representative Lynn.
I'm considering an amendment to change it to 4. Got the difference between 3 and 5. At the appropriate time.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna object to the amendment to the amendment. I find that 3 is very satisfactory, and that I'm not sure what we're afraid of.
Do you think 4 is better than 3? Better than 5?
It's a sucker's question, Representative.
Yes,
Flynn.
It is.
Yes, 4 is better than 5.
Thank you.
Jane, we're going to take a brief at ease. We're taking up amendment number 3 to determine whether we want to go from 5 largest contributors to 3 largest contributors. We were discussing here in committee what happens if 10 entities contribute the same amount of money to an ad campaign. How would we determine which ones are the ones that would be posted in the in the disclaimer, either audio or visual. And so what I'd like to do is to, we heard from Mr. Patasson, the APOC attorney, that this would be done through regulation. I don't want it done through regulation. I want it to be done in statute. So would you work on addressing that for us as we go through this roster of amendments, and we'll take it up as a separate amendment for this part of the legislation, so that, and what I'd like from members is a little bit of input from Mr. Bullard while we're on the record as to what would be the mechanism, and he'll draft it into language for us as a conceptual amendment or otherwise. What are your thoughts, Mr. Patasson, or Senator French, or members of the committee, as to how we would like to determine that by statute, if you have 10 entities that all put in $1,000 or $10,000, we select which entities are then go into the commercial? Thoughts? Senator French?
Thank you. I would leave it to APOC to set that out in regulation.
I'm going to set the bill aside then. Sorry?
I'd leave it to APOC to set it in regulation.
Okay, well said. Mr. Patasson, that's not going to be an option for you. So how would, let's make some regulation here on the fly.
With what Washington does is they say the entity gets to choose. That's, from a legal perspective, probably the most less burdensome on the speech itself. That would be essentially what I could offer at this point. I mean, there's a number of variations you can do, though. You can. It's hard to say what APOC's role in choosing those five or three could be, though. So,
Representative Cotto?
Yes, Mr. Chair. You know, in a race, 10 people all cross the finish line at the same time. They all are in first place. So in order to deal with this question, you don't want to have them submit 10, but the person receiving the money could return a dollar to each of numbers 4 through 10 and create the first three by simply returning money.
I'm sorry, say that again?
You could return a small amount of money from numbers 4 through 10 if all 10 actually contributed the same amount of money, so that the candidate determine the first three. It's just to show that there's a usable way to deal with a tie, a 10-way tie.
It's cumbersome for me as somebody who's responsible for this. I'm very focused on not having ambiguity rest in this legislation or be subject to regulation by APOC. I'd rather, if we're going to bring out campaign disclosure out in the sunlight, I'd just as soon be specific in what we are articulating. And so in this case, this is a significant issue to me because arguably you get 10 entities that contribute to, let's say, the Pebble Partnership or Renewable Resource. I mean, these are two very, depending on what side of that discussion you're on, it's a toxic entity to the other side of the issue. And so I have no idea how many contributors there are to either of those entities. I think that's probably the subject of the litigation that's before APOC. And so those entities may have donors that have more attractive brands and less attractive brands. And I want to make sure that we have put into statute a manner of who selects that and not left it up to APOC regulation. So the state of Washington, Mr. Patasson, what do they allow the entity itself to choose the three entities that are
five
right. That are
again, that's my understanding, and to the extent that on an ad you would see that they've chosen these three to five, again with the disclosure that with the forms that actually go to APOC, a member of the public who were to see, okay, this is who they named as the top three, I'm not so sure about that. They have the backup ability to go to APOC, review the disclosures to APOC to see who else was contributing. But I understand that a majority of Alaskans will probably get their information from the ad itself.
Indeed. So, Mr. Bullard, what I'm going to be interested in, I think, then, is to conform to the Washington law. So can you say that in some compact language so that Mr. Bullard can develop some language for us for conceptual amendment? How does Washington do it presently?
Washington, is, and again, this is just my understanding, they they allow the entity that's making the communication to decide, given the time, which contributors of the of the ties they're going to list on the end.
All right, Mr. Buller, did you catch that?
Chairman Ramros, this is Alpheus Bullard of Legislative Legal Services, and yes, I have enough information to prepare an amendment.
Okay, so we will get with you shortly. We are going to recess today at 11:30. Representative Dahlstrom has a leadership meeting, and I want to make sure that we go through this with we're already missing Representative Gruenberg. I want to make sure that we go through this with a maximum amount of members. So we'll work on that, and then and then Senator French, can you, or Mr. Potasik, can you take me through C on page 7? It says identification of the name and city and state of residence or principal place of business as applicable of each of the person's five largest contributors. So how would the audio read? Does this this doesn't take us to section 14 yet, which are the sample disclaimers. We're still is this where we want to? Oh, I see the sample disclaimers are on page 8, line 14. So for identification of the name and city and state of residence of the principal place of business. So an entity in C identifying itself, the five or three largest contributors. Can you take us through that again, please, Mr. Potasik?
Would you mind? Either way, I mean,
sure.
Representative Ramos, the way I see that playing out now in radio, of course not in TV ads, but in radio only, you would hear paid for by BP Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska, right? Name of the business, city and state of the principal place of business.
Wait, who's online? Can we?
Who do we, work.
Thank you. Representative Gruenberg.
No, thank you. Yep. Actually, that's an important correction. Thank you. For audio, Mr. Chairman, we had removed the city and state already to reduce that audio disclaimer as much as possible. So this is only for print.
I see.
Print only would have written out, paid for by BP, Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska.
Understood. So three or five now in print or on television would now
visible
would right. now be Not visible audio. On
right.
the screen.
Right. Right.
Okay. So we are back to amendment number 3 before us. Representative Gruenberg, welcome. Representative Gruenberg, we have so far passed out two amendments from a committee. Amendment number 1 deleted section 5 and or number 5 in section 10. Amendment number 2 deleted the audio component from television commercials. We're happy to have you, and we are now taking up amendment number 3, which is P.9.
Mr. Chairman.
Which deals with, hang on 1 second, I'm just framing this for Representative Gruenberg. We are now taking up P.9,
okay.
Which is the five largest contributors or three largest contributors. And my understanding is that this would be a conforming amendment for radio and for and for television, or is this, Mr. Potasin, I would ask that to you, the way this is written, is this for all forms of media, or is this just for television?
It's all communications.
All communications, print, radio, and television, is that correct? Senator French, is that clear to you?
Well, I'd say visible. That is means print and what's printed at the bottom of the TV screen. So visible, and then audio in radio only.
Yes, right.
No. My staff is about to jump on me, I'm sure, because I keep saying it wrong. It would pertain only, because the city and state pertains only to what's written, right? Only to print ads, like in the newspaper, or what you see at the bottom of a TV screen. Because we don't put the city and state ever. It's never spoken. You never hear it in a radio ad.
So the conformity that I'm looking for as chairs is that if we settle on 3 or 4 or 5, that we settle on that number throughout all forms of communication. That it's not
Correct.
3 for TV and 5 for radio. That's
Correct.
What I'm trying to get at.
Right.
That's how I answered the question.
So, Mr. Patasin, if we, right now for 5 is for print, radio, and television. If we change this number to 3 on line 10, it's applicable to all forms of media. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we have before us amendment number 3. Is there more committee discussion? Representative Lynn.
I'd make an amendment, number 1 to amendment number 3, changing the 5 to 4 in an effort to reach a compromise between the 3 and the 5.
And I'll object. And Susan, can you take the roll? Do we need to discuss the number, Representative Gatto?
For curiosity, when you make an amendment to amendment, the amendment was to insert 3. Is the correct language to change 3 to 4?
I think so.
Rather than 5 to 4.
Well, may I restate?
Representative Lynn.
Page 7, line 10, delete 5, insert 4.
Is the amendment to the amendment? I think we're clear on what the amendment is. I'll object. Susan, if you take the roll, please.
Representative Dahlstrom.
No.
Representative Herron.
No.
Representative Gatto.
No.
Representative Lynn.
Yes.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes.
Representative Holmes.
Yes.
Representative Rammers.
No.
3 yes, 4 no.
Okay. So the amendment to the amendment fails. We have amendment number 3 back before us. Is there any more committee discussion? I presume the objection is maintained?
Yeah.
Okay, the objection is maintained. Susan, please take the roll.
Representative Herron?
Yes.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
No.
Representative Gruenberg?
No.
Representative Holmes?
No.
Representative Dahlstrom?
Yes.
Representative Rammers?
Yes.
4 yes, 3 no.
So amendment number 3 passes from committee. We are now to amendment number 4, which is an amendment by Representative Lynn. This is P.8.
P.11.
Representative Lynn, would you like to move amendment number 4?
I'd move amendment number 4, please.
Representative Holmes objects for the purposes of discussion.
The purpose of amendment number 4 is it just lets the officers of these companies be careful in whatever they put out to the public. Regards to the defamation.
Question. Representative Grimberg.
And this is probably to Mr. Patasin to, or Representative Senator French. It's a legal question. Under line 9 of the amendment, a person who makes the communication under this section may not, quote, with actual malice. My recollection of New York Times v. Sullivan says, with actual malice or reckless disregard of the truth. And I think that my friend should correct me if I'm wrong. I hope this will be a friendly amendment. To add with actual malice, to add the phrase, and it's conceptual because Alpheus Bullard should put the language from New York Times v. Sullivan, would add the phrase, or with reckless disregard of the truth. And I'd ask Senator French if my recollection's correct and what his thoughts would be on that. Or Mr. Patasin, I don't want to put you guys on the spot.
Through the chair, Professor Gruenberg.
You've caught on to our committee, Senator French.
I'll have to confess I didn't review New York Times versus Sullivan before I came down this morning. So I'll defer to Mr. Bullard.
Oh, is he on the phone? Oh, yeah, I'd ask Alpheus then.
Mr. Bullard, are you with us?
Good morning. How can I be helpful to the committee? I'm sorry, I did not hear the question.
Professor Gruenberg has a question.
Okay, yeah. Mr. Bullard, this is Max Gruenberg. We're looking at Amendment P11, line 9. It says, with actual malice. My recollection of New York Times v. Sullivan and its progeny, including Tate and somebody in the West versus Gnome Publishing Company, I think the standard is not just with actual malice, but is also with reckless disregard of the truth. Am I not correct, sir? Through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, that is one of the elements of the definition of actual malice. I believe that it's incorporated in the term.
There you go.
Oh, that's correct. Yes, so it's with, that's right. Actual malice is defined as knowing of the falsehood or with reckless disregard of the truth, and with that in there, we don't need an amendment. Thank you.
Mr. Patterson, why do we need Amendment Number 4? What does it do for us in this piece of legislation?
It seems to me that what Amendment Number 4 does is creates a violation of AIPOC law if somebody were to defame a candidate in a candidate election. Now, beyond that, I don't see that it does anything else. What it does is it appears that we can take the fine from the individual officers responsible for the corporation. That's how I conceive this.
Representative Lynn, is that the purpose of Amendment Number 4?
Yeah, it puts them on notice to be careful when they put this stuff out, that they don't do it with malice or reckless disregard of the truth, as my colleague on the right says. It just puts them on notice to be very careful what they put out there. Because they could be liable.
Thank you. Mr. Dunnigan, are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you.
Any thoughts about Amendment Number 4?
Two. First, it seems curious that it's in the identification of communication sections. If the committee or the legislature were wanting to enact these kinds of provisions, I'm just curious as to whether this is where you want to put them. The other comment is that while I agree with the comments with respect to defamation and the need to protect people from it, this seems way off the mark for what is actually this bill is about in terms of simple disclosure. I mean, defamation is a whole different set of issues with respect to campaigns. And finally, defamation with actual malice is already actionable. I think from a clarity and drafting and focus standard, which I think the chair mentioned earlier, while I don't really have any problem with the ideas behind all this, I think it's a pretty dramatic change for the original focus of the bill. And perhaps I would invite the committee to think whether, as good as this debate may be, whether this actually detracts from the major function that you're trying to accomplish with the bill itself.
Yes. I find it to be superfluous also. Is there other discussion on the amendment? Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Chair, I would be interested in hearing from the sponsor whether he thinks it's superfluous or not. I'm talking about Senator French.
Senator,
we know you don't.
Sponsor the bill. Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg. You know, my view is we are stepping into new territory. I think it's important to keep in mind that this bill addresses the outfall from Citizens United, that it's going to have corporations and unions participating for the first time ever in independent expenditures for and against candidates. And I think it's probably a good idea, as Representative Lynn points out, to put them on notice that the same rules that have applied in other elections to individuals speaking should apply to them.
To the chair. So you would support the amendment, is that correct?
Short answer is yes.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to maintain an objection to this amendment. Is there other comments?
I do have one.
Representative Gruenberg.
Regardless of the question of the scope of the bill, I think it's important that we stand firmly as a legislature behind the principle that people shouldn't be allowed to slander and libel people in this. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just good policy. I hope you could remove the objection.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. I think we already do. Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Is that not already prohibited? Slander, malice, libel? I mean, it doesn't seem to me we've gotten this far in all these issues without this already being incorporated somewhere, which means it already applies, and writing it here simply duplicates the same statements found under different sections.
Mr. Potasnik.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto. The APOC statutes don't have a law that essentially removes actual malice from campaign and candidate elections and all that, but all this seems to do is to tell the corporation and their principal officers that if they make they may not make defamatory speech in a candidate election.
I understand.
Defamatory speech is not considered mostly protected speech, and what the amendment does is just if they do that, if they do make malicious speech, APOC can obtain the fine through the officers themselves.
That's what it says.
That's what it
says.
The
way I see it.
Yeah, and that's not, to answer your question a little more shortly, though, this doesn't exist anywhere, but the idea that a candidate can seek redress from somebody who defames them, that's already in existence in tort law. So.
Representative Goff?
Just to follow up. So whether it's a corporation or a union, you would go to the president, or is there a way to identify which person would be the liable person?
The way this is drafted and contemplated, it's the responsible officer. So.
Is that wide open?
I don't find that to be ambiguous. I mean, somebody's okay. Responsible for putting out an ad that's defamatory. I mean,
gentlemen, just I'll remind you, Susan here, just if you'll identify yourself for the benefit of Susan.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg, very briefly.
Yeah. Through the chair. This is the same standard they use in holding a corporation criminally liable. It's the people who are in control. It's very similar.
Nevertheless, I find it superfluous and that it invites ambiguity. It fails my test of inviting ambiguity. Is the my objection is maintained? Who had the objection, Susan? Was it me?
You.
Representative. I'll remove my
objection. I'll object, and Susan, if you'll take the roll, please.
Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Representative Lynn.
Yes.
Representative Grunberg.
Yes.
Representative Holmes.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom.
No.
Representative Herron.
No.
Representative Rammers.
No.
4 yes, 3 no.
So with that, amendment number 4 moves from committee. It's 11:25. We'll recess till the call of the chair, but it will very likely at 5 p.m.